Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to another episode of Jamming with Jason. Hey, today is one of those kind of episodes that I love. So my friend Sima and I, we kind of reconnected after, I think it was 2 or 3 years, and we'll get into that more in the episode. But it's just a great, you know, when people that you know come back into your awareness, right? They might see something that you post, you see something that they post. There's probably a reason, right, why that is happening. And it's always a great opportunity to reach out, reconnect. That's exactly what Sima and I did. And hey, we're here recording a podcast episode today. So sit back, pop in your headphones, and make sure to listen to the entire episode, because there's going to be at least one thing that you're going to hear today that's going to help you to change your life and change the life of those around you. So with that, let's roll that episode. You are Jamming with Jason Mefford, where you hear inspiring interviews with some amazing people. Some are famous, some may seem ordinary, and they are all doing extraordinary things to positively change the world. Sometimes it's just you and me having an intimate and authentic conversation about how you can change the world around you and rewrite the story of your life by being more authentic, accepting and loving yourself more, and spreading love to others. Since really, all you need is love. And what the world needs now is love, sweet love. We discuss all aspects of self-improvement, growth, and so much more. Great content, insightful advice that's practical and helpful to anyone that listens. You're always eager to come back for more and share with your friends and family, since you learn something in every episode. So sit back and enjoy the easy listening while you feel seen and heard in this informative, authentic, and entertaining podcast. Now, let's roll that beautiful podcast footage. All right, Sima, it is good to have you with me again. It's I think you saw something that I had posted and kind of reached out to me, and so we were able to reconnect.
It was a podcast episode you were on.
Okay, there we go. Yeah, where I was a guest on one of the podcasts that you heard.
Exactly.
And I think it's been about 3 years or so since we, yes, you know, really kind of talked. We were in a coaching mastermind group together.
Exactly.
But it's great. So maybe just tee it up a little bit. Just give people kind of the 30-second view of who you are, because I know when we had our follow-up call and now today, there's a lot of alignment in what you and I think about and how we're trying to help the world. So, and an important message that I think people need to hear, and we'll get more into that too, but give everybody kind of the 30-second thumbnail, who you are, and then we'll jump in.
So I'm Sima Newell, and I coach executives primarily through burnout. I also coach women and leaders in improving communications and how to do that effectively, because they're often told they're just either too direct, mm-hmm, or they're so people pleasing they get, you know, 19 projects on the guy who got 3 gets the promotion. So that is a stepping stone. And we were talking before we hit record about the, you know, stress in the workplace and stress at the leadership level in the workplace. So that's really my shtick. I got into it by accident because I was harassed and burned out and spent a long time actually on medical leave and wound up losing my job as a result. I won my cases. Like, I can actually say I was harassed.
Well, yeah, so you actually got
Yeah.
some
So,
compensation for it. The court said, yeah, you were
but
harassed.
yeah, I mean,
And
it was in the UN system, so it was not,
okay.
not like what you'd find in America, maybe, but the principles there. And I went public because as a leader, I thought I need to set an example and people need to know what's going on, need to know they're not alone and how to handle it. I mean, we've been talking a lot about lessons, like the lessons from that. They've just compounded and compounded and compounded. And so now I, having gone through the experience of coaching people, I understand how to support others through that process. So that's me in a nutshell. And
Well, and
I'm
I
an
think,
engineer by training originally, so I have the whole left brain shtick too.
Well, so, and that's again where we're kind of common, right? Because I have the accounting left brain side, you have the engineering left brain side, but neither one of us are really left brain people either. And so I think people are going to see that as we start talking and some of the stuff we're talking about, they're like, what?
What?
I mean, an accountant and an engineer get together and you guys were talking about what? But I think it's interesting, too, because, I'm here in America, but you're in Switzerland, right? And so what we're going to talk about today is something, it's not just a US thing, it's not just a Europe thing. I mean, this is happening all over the world, right? And you experienced burnout, you experienced harassment. I had the same things happen to me, right? And I think that's why both of us are so passionate in helping people not burn out, but I think also in just starting to ask some questions and not let their job kill them, right? And again, I say that, right? Like people all over the world, your jobs are killing you. And some people are going to be like, oh, Jason, that's hyperbole. No. One of my friends found out yesterday, one of her colleagues, only 67 years old, seemingly in perfect health, not overweight, healthy, but she died unexpectedly, and it was because of stress at work, right? And so, I don't know, maybe let's talk about a little bit. Maybe you share a little bit of your story. I share a little bit of my story just so people realize this
Love to
is a real
hear.
thing because you and I have both gone through it. And maybe they can start to see some of the things that they're going through and how we can kind of help fix this or stop it from happening.
So I would imagine we can both agree that somewhere in there we can come back to it. There's inner game, right?
The inner
There's how you're
game.
reacting to the environment, and that causes like all of those reactions that each person has causes a compounding effect. And when you break that, then everything else falls into place. So that's sort of the end point. Where I'd start with was my own experience. I walked into, I'd been in this very toxic situation, and that's not everybody's situation, right? But I was in this very toxic situation. And I remember one day I walked into the office of one of the leaders reporting to me, and I could see her lips moving. And I could hear nothing. Like something's wrong. And I felt so dizzy. So my assistant brought me to medical services, and my blood pressure was absolutely through the roof. They say it's a silent killer. Speaking of,
It is.
it is, right? My blood pressure was through the roof. So, I was told to lie down for a while, and I did, and then I went out for lunch, and I just thought, I can't go back into the office. And then when I couldn't go back into the office, I had this realization of I really can't go back in that situation ever. And I had leave planned, like I was supposed to go home. I'm originally Canadian, so I was supposed to go home in a few days. And so my physician put me on sick leave for 3 days, and then I took that time. Well, as I learned later, burnout's a 2-year thing. Like it's something that takes a long time to actually recover from. And what I also realized, because I'm a nerd, I research everything.
Yay!
And
You're nerds unite, right? I'm all with you
exactly.
on that.
So I started reading. Like I watched every TED Talk and I read everything I could get my hands on. And I talked to, psychologists, psychiatrists, the whole thing to try to figure out like what just happened to me. Because I was high performing. I got, everything done. I'd never had this kind of issue. I'd actually always had great bosses, no nothing. And then boom, not functioning and, really not functioning. And so as my brain kind of came back online, I started reading and I was working somewhere where I had access to research literature. And so I went into the library online and I found all the, all the scholarly articles and I read them all and realized that 95% of cases where you've been mobbed or harassed or bullied, whatever term
Whatever you
fits,
call it, yep.
that article was using the term mobbing. 95% of the cases where people are mobbed for a prolonged period. So prolonged period, if I remember correctly, was like it was like 6 weeks or more or something like that on a daily basis, or weekly basis. It really wasn't that long. Like I'd been going at it for 2.5 years, right? And it was far more than weekly. 95% of cases get a PTSD that's as severe as trigger warning, close your ears if you don't want to hear bad things, rape or war.
Wow.
And the other 5% get a burnout. I was lucky I got a burnout. So then I started digging, what is behind this? Why? Why does this even happen? And that was a giant rabbit hole, and I could talk for hours on that. But maybe I'd love to, hear what resonates with you, Jason, on that, because you said you've been through it too.
Well, I've been through it too. I mean, it was I had an issue where I was working at a company. We got a new CEO. Every time that happens, right, all of the executives end up getting cut. And I mean, you know it, right? I mean, I knew what I was kind of getting into, but what I found was a lot of the new peers that he would bring in were like, I mean, we were kind of like a happy family before he got there, right? It's like, yeah, we'd argue with each other. But it was all there was no malice to it, right?
No.
It's like we weren't trying to torpedo each other or anything like that. We just have a disagreement, we'd argue about it, and then the decision would be made and we moved on, right? I mean, that was kind of the culture that I was used to. I really enjoyed that. But like I said, some of these new peers that were coming in, all of a sudden they started doing some things to me that I just kind of equate to like people dropping or lobbing grenades at you or putting landmines, and it's like all of a sudden you had to start stepping very carefully, right? And so, I had some other personal things that were going on. I was on antidepressant medicine. My blood pressure was high, so I was taking blood pressure medicine. And I remember this one meeting that we had. It was up on the fifth floor, which was our executive floor. My offices were on the third floor. And so I'd gone up, we were in a conference room, we had this meeting, and one of the new peers did some really kind of malicious backstabbing things to me in the meeting, really trying to make me look like I had no fucking clue what I was talking about, right? With the intention of kind of taking some of my responsibilities to her. Right. And so convincing the CEO, look, this kid doesn't know what he's talking about. I should be the one that runs this function. I need to take this away from Jason. Right. And so I remember, walking out of that meeting, right. And it's two floors. So I usually would walk down. And so I go into the stairwell and same thing. I'm kind of spinning. I'm a little bit dizzy. Like, what the fuck just happened? Right. I mean, I'm still in a little bit of shock coming out of this, and I walk into the stairwell to walk back downstairs, and it's the old, concrete metal. And I walked in there and it was like my senses just went on overload. I could smell the concrete, I could smell the iron of the steel in the handrails and everything else. And I just leaned up against the wall and I couldn't move. Right. I was just like, I mean, panic attack at work. I was just I couldn't move. And it was, I couldn't move. And yet at the same point, I had this like compelling desire to get the hell out of there, right? Like I wanted to run away, but I couldn't move, right? And so I tried to breathe through it after a few minutes. I mean, again, luckily nobody came in the stairwell at the same time, but that was like, that's a big warning flag, right?
Yes, huge.
And like I said, I mean, people think, oh, this doesn't happen. Well, here's two of us who have had, very similar situations, right? To where the stress and pressure at work, whether that's from harassment or other things, it's real and it starts to affect us physically, right? I mean, both of us actually had physical reactions to this.
Absolutely. Let's see, I have the stats here. It's between 60 and 82%, Jason, of senior leaders report experiencing burnout symptoms in the last year.
In the last year. Okay.
This is not like, oh, it's a little minority, but it's so stigmatized, nobody talks about it. Nobody says, oh, yeah, I went through that. So I'm just so like, I'm actually really honored to have this conversation and that, we just shared that because people need to know they're not alone, that it's okay, that there is life on the other side, that, there are many things, and that it's a normal, like, people are pushing themselves to the point of just, yeah, not functioning and having panic attacks and having, just brain
Well, yeah,
fog. I mean, we could list all of the symptoms, but I mean, just being so unwell, you can't function.
and so again, we kind of made reference to this a couple of times, but let's just like be crystal clear to everybody listening, right? It's like 60 to 80% of people ex have experienced this in the last year. You probably,
Leaders,
people, pe
leaders, the people running
leaders,
things, leaders.
yeah, and so. Chances are, if you're listening to this, right, you've probably experienced it. But I think what the point you brought up too was, I mean, I felt ashamed about it, right? It's like I didn't want to tell anybody. I didn't tell anybody, my wife at the time, anybody about what actually happened because I was ashamed about it. You know, because it's like, well, here I am. I'm an executive. I'm supposed to be like, Rambo and like this tough guy, and it's like, how come this little thing pushed me over the edge? So I think, like you said, you're not alone if you're experiencing this, and there's no shame in it either because the majority of leaders are dealing with this. We're
And
just not talking about it.
what you described wasn't a little thing, right? Like you had people purposefully pushing you down to push themselves up. And that's very typical. And if you ever go into the realm of understanding domestic abuse, the patterns are exactly the same. It's just
So,
that.
because one person's trying to exercise dominance and control over the other
Yeah.
person
Yeah.
and using
Exactly.
manipulative tactics to try to do that.
Absolutely. Exactly. So it's really like that is, and that's why I said, it was a really toxic environment because that is quite toxic behavior and anybody will crack under it. It's like you push somebody off a balcony, they're going to break their arm. Like it just cause effect, right? This is not, and yet, I guess from all the centuries of, ignoring mental health issues, it's still hard. And it's one of those two where when you're in a role where your cognitive function is your value, when that stops functioning, it's very scary,
Well, yeah,
right? You don't
especially you
want
said
to be
we're
out
both.
there going, I can't think, but I'll be a great, CFO, CIO.
Well, and we're both left brain, right? And the and we're in very analytical, where thinking is important. That's what we do for a living, right? I mean, I remember one of the guys, it was at the same company, but he was a sales leader. Their offices were kind of right by me, so he had to walk by my office every time he went to the bathroom. And I remember him stopping one time. He's like, Jason, what do you actually do? All I do is every time I walk by, it's like you're just sitting there thinking. I'm like, yeah, Bob, most of my job is thinking. So, yeah, that's what I do for a living. So, like you said, when when our thinking gets impaired or when these things happen, right? We take it, it's an identity level thing,
Yes.
right? That all of a sudden it's like so damaging of, well, I'm an accountant or I'm an auditor or I'm an engineer or I'm a doctor. And now if I can't do that job anymore, well, then I must not be worth anything, right? Is what a lot of people end up thinking. But I love that analogy that you said too about pushing off the balcony, right? And the stigma around mental health. Because, you know, again, if somebody broke their arm, physical thing,
Yeah.
right? Physical health issue. I unless the person's just really a jerk, they're not going to be like, come on, Sima, I know you broke your arm, but come on, lift up that 100-pound thing and help me.
Exactly.
No, they're going to be
No.
like, no, you broke your arm. I understand. You know, I'm going to give you some grace. I'm going to, you know, whatever. But when it's in a mental health space, right? People don't think twice about it. But like you said, if you get pushed off a balcony, it don't matter how strong and how whatever you are, you're going to hurt yourself when you get in some of these psychological dangers. You're going to get hurt no matter how strong you are, and it's nothing to do with you. It's just these kind of situations hurt.
Exactly. Exactly. And what was I going to say? Don't know. Skip me. It'll come back if it's important.
Yeah. Well, and so let's, you know, I mean, we
Yeah.
talked about, I mean, again, hopefully people understand it's a real thing. It's a real thing. We both experienced it. Lots of people you and I coach experience it or are going through it. So, you know, maybe to just kind of give some people
Oh.
a little bit of hope, right? I mean, both you and I are through it,
Yes.
right? Through our particular experiences. So I guess first off, there's hope because we both made it through. But, you know, what are maybe some things that you know, kind of share with your clients to help them? You know, it's not a 12-step program, but
Five.
awareness. Well, I'm going back to, like, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Awareness and realizing you have a problem is usually the first step, right? And so again, if people are listening and they're like, oh shit, this might be happening to me, right? What are some of the things, you know, and again, I mean, there's value in hiring somebody who's a coach, having a mentor that you can actually talk to, but what are some things that people can start to do to help them? Because like I said, I mean, you do this full time. I've got some things that I typically tell people, but
Cool, we can exchange.
we can exchange and share, because that's a great thing, right? Is it's like we both have different experiences, and we can learn from each other.
So I did say five, and the acronym I use is BRIGHT,
Right.
BRIGHT. So, and I've tried to do this out of sequence, and it's okay, but it actually works better in that order. So B is for boundaries. And it's not just like I have boundaries and you won't cross them. It's understanding what's truly important to you and making sure you're putting first things first in your whole life. And you know, as an executive, is you're not a cookie cutter clone in our job description, right? You're there because of you and your vision and what you personally bring. So you have to take care of the whole package of yourself, and that's family. And that's health, and it's fitness, and it's career and work. Like it's the whole spirituality, everything. It's the whole package. Whatever is important to you, you need to have be clear on what that is, and put those, you know, in Stephen Covey's language, put the big stones in the jar first, right? Okay. So it's not just boundaries for the sake of boundaries. It's really around what's important. And then the second one is resilience. And resilience is around understanding two things. One is that time follows energy. So a lot of people feel if I work harder, if I write more reports, I mean, my situation, I was thinking when you were telling your story about being undermined in that meeting, I lived that, and they hired about three people to kind of keep whittling at me and, oh, you did this report weekly? Okay, well, can you do this report weekly? Oh, wait, you've managed that too. Can you do this report weekly? You know? And so it feels like it takes a lot of time, but actually it's taking an awful lot of energy. So you need to figure out where your energy drains are and just plug those holes, right? And it can be some of that has to do with, again, what's important to you. Some of it has to do with your personality. Like pe some people get really, extroverts get really energized being around people, and introverts need that downtime. And if you're like constantly in the opposite, you're going to get drained. Some people get really fueled by nurturing people, and other people get really fueled by looking at spreadsheets, and yeah, and so if you're a spreadsheet person and you're trying to raise little kids, you're going to need to find a balance because you have to do both, right? And so it's really understanding that you're what's draining your energy and then finding ways to reduce those activities and increase the percentage of time you spend in your zone, like when you're in flow, when you're really feeling good. And then the other part of resilience, which I think you'll appreciate, is like your self-talk habits, right? Which is understanding like everything's habit, including your self-talk. So if every time somebody's telling you something, and that's where I was alluding a little bit to inner game, and this is the beginning of it. If every time somebody you think I'm not enough, or that wasn't enough, or I'm not showing my value, or what's going to happen if I don't finish the report, and yeah, like something happens and your brain chatters at you, when you're able to turn that around to have a more positive self-talk, you become more resilient. There's a whole art form to that, right? Like that's a whole
Well, there
package.
is, and we can jump into that too a little bit, but I mean, we can't give everybody everything today,
No.
but yeah.
I,
So what are the, yeah, let's
right.
go
So
through
that
the
was B
last ones
R
and then
I
talk
is
about
identity, understanding who
identity.
you are, what the golden thread in your life has been, what is your life purpose, where are you on that journey now, where are you going, why? There's a whole process for that. And then the part that people always want first, what do I have to do? You know, because you have to be before you can do, right? So what do I have to do? So it's the tools and techniques, like how can you communicate better? How can you negotiate better? How can you deal with toxic people more effectively? What are the things that what needs to be in your toolkit now that you understand all of this? How can you read your personality and other people's personality and have a more easy relationship with people who are different? Like all of that. And then the last one is evolution. Like, how do you put that into practice? What's your vision? How are you reflecting on that? Are you doing that on a regular basis? And you know, how do you take all that forward? Because the bumps never stop, but if you're resilient to them, they're okay. It just actually kind of becomes fun. It's like the next growth
Yeah.
cycle and game, right?
Well, those are it's a great process to kind of go through, right? And again, that's kind of how you're helping people go through, is
Yeah,
making sure that they're going
exactly.
through each of these different phases. But I know, I mean, especially lately, the whole idea of identity, I think is one of, so I'm gonna say something that might piss some people off too, but you kind of mentioned the inner game. Right. And I think so much of the time, people going through this, and I myself was guilty of this, of thinking, well, it's the other people that are causing this to happen, and how dare they do this, blah, 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 blah. But I wasn't taking personal responsibility. I wasn't doing some of the things that I needed to do. And honestly, my identity of who I was as a person was tied up into my job. And
Yes.
so if I wasn't performing well at work, or if I couldn't get my stuff done, or if somebody was making fun of me or harassing me or telling me that I wasn't very good, I would take all those things personally, right? Because it felt like a personal attack to my identity. And that's where it becomes really, really damaging, right? Because we're taking all of this on and we're feeling it at a core level. And then we're feeling a lot of these emotions like shame and guilt and anxiety or fear of what's going to happen next. Like you're walking around on eggshells, and who's the next person that's going to toss a grenade at me, right? So you always feel like you're on all the time, right? And I've had several coaching clients the last little bit that that's where it's really gotten back to quick is the identity. And it's like, they'll come in and it'll kind of go like this. Oh, I'm working so much. I'm working so much overtime. I'm working 60 or 70 hours a week. I'm having this, issue with this particular person. I just can't quite get everything done that I want, blah, 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 all this kind of stuff, right? And again, it's all external. And it's like, hold it, just a minute, time out, right? Decouple your identity from your job first off. Are you working 60 hours because you're putting pressure on yourself? Or is that really what your organization is expecting? And I know some organizations do expect that, but I see the vast majority of people are putting that pressure on themselves, right? When it may not even need to be there to begin with. So you can just like shrug and let stuff go up front.
Exactly. And that's where, right, when you know what's important to you, the boundaries, the resilience, and the identity go together, because when you know what's important to you, then you will shrug off the 20 hours that are maybe important to somebody else, but not really important to you. And when you have the tools to do that effectively, you'll be praised and promoted for it eventually, rather than push down, right? So it's really like there's a lot of self-talk and fear of, oh, well, if I don't do that, this is going to happen. And sometimes, like, we all have to hit the accelerator sometimes, right? There are project deadlines, there are hard deadlines. We moved offices. When I first joined the last organization I was in, it was, hey, congratulations, we're building a new building. I was the CIO. We're building the new building. And the architects have submitted the plan. We realized they forgot to put the data center on it. If you need one, let us know by Thursday.
Well, I don't need it, but all of you probably want the IT systems to work. So yeah, I probably need a data center.
Tell anybody, we scored the data center at the sacrifice of six parking spots, but then we had hard deadlines because there were leases coming up, and we needed, if the building wasn't being finished on time, which buildings, there are delays, then we needed to figure out what was going to happen to those people and make arrangements for them. And we needed a certain amount. So, sometimes there are hard deadlines and you're going to be working nights and weekends, and that's not the cause of burnout,
Right.
right? Because if you're
But
doing what
there's
you
a
love,
discrete project that you just get through.
I mean, even me right now, I'm doing some work on things that I'm finding quite enjoyable, and it's very intense, and I'm going to be traveling in a few weeks, and I was traveling a couple weeks ago, and so, like, it's a very busy period. I walked down and well up and down an Alp on Sunday, right? Like, I took that space for myself because I could have kept going, I could have caught up more, I could have done more, and yet that's one of my stones, like my own physical well-being, right? So yeah.
Well, which is important. And
And
I
it's so
think
cool
too,
to
I
be out. I feel
mean,
so lucky, by the way, to be able to just, like, oh, I'm going to pick an Alp and walk down it on Sunday.
the hills are alive with the sound of music, right? Because you live in a beautiful place. I mean,
Amazing.
Switzerland is one of my favorite places. It's beautiful. And you have nature right around you and all those different options. And like you said, so, that's part of the boundaries of look. I mean, we all need this. We all need some self-care. We need time away, however that looks for people, right? But if you're not doing some kind of self-care, even if it's just for a few minutes a day, right? Because I even suggest that to people, it's like just listen to a couple of songs that you really like, or just do something for a few minutes a day that actually make you feel happy. Because, by doing that, it makes it so much easier for the rest of the time. Because it's kind of like, I mean, burnout, we can equate to like a battery, right? And you have those energy drains, and if you have a negative self-talk, all those things are draining your battery, draining your battery, draining your battery, draining your battery. You have to do something, right, to replace and replenish. And 5 minutes of singing or laughing right, helps to raise your battery level. And if you do enough of that, you never end up getting a burnout, right? But most of us, we just
Simple.
keep going, 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 going until we have the panic attack or, high
Absolutely.
blood pressure through the roof, and physically our body says, I'm not taking this anymore.
So I read a book a long time ago, way at the beginning of my, sort of management development process at the time. And I remember it, the suggestion that they had in that book was what you're saying, like you have a battery, and what we're usually told is get the stuff you don't like to do out of the way first. But what that does is it drains you into the negative. And what this the author of that was suggesting was actually start your day with something that recharges, that replenishes, so that then when the dip happens, you're not going below the zero line. It's like you don't want your bank balance to go negative, right? So I found that very helpful as a principle, and in practice, journaling in the morning. Like now I'll either journal or meditate or do some self-hypnosis or some combination of those, depending how much time I have. But just as a simple starter, just train of thought, it is not, this is not literature. You can burn it later, but just, oh, I need to drink more coffee. I'm not awake yet. Dot, 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 blah, blah. Listen to an interesting podcast. Oh, I don't remember. Mustn't forget to feed
I can't
the
remember because my
monster.
brain is too
Yeah,
foggy because I don't
whatever.
have my coffee.
But getting all that stuff out frees yourself, frees your mental space for the creative thoughts, the downloads that are going to be really important to you, and all of that. So, because your brain knows it's parked somewhere, you can always go back to it. It won't necessarily make a lot of sense, and it really doing it in the morning frees up your day. I mean, some people can't do it in the morning because of family obligations, and they do it at other times, but that is just one simple thing that for 15 minutes a day makes a massive difference.
Well, and it's, doing that in the morning helps, like you said, recharge your battery more as you notice during the day, right? That's one of the things that I do and I suggest that other people do. If you feel like you're dipping down, do a little timeout, go do something that will help to raise your battery level, right? And
Exactly.
again, so some of those same things. If you like to journal, hey, maybe journal for 5 minutes in the middle of the day, right? Listen to music, do some yoga, do some meditation, just breathe
Go
for a couple of
outside.
minutes. Go outside, put your
See the
feet in the
sun, feel the
ground.
rain. Yeah,
Yep.
exactly.
Whatever it is, any of those little things can make a big difference. And just literally like a few seconds or a few minutes can actually recharge your battery so much quicker than you realize, and so much more than you actually realize. One thing that I do sometimes is you mentioned the sun, right? Is go outside, spend a minute, be in the sun, and just, feel gratitude for it and feel the energy coming into you, lightening you, raising your battery level. And again, even just for a minute, it makes a huge difference for people.
And going back to the identity level, what I'm inferring, and you can tell me if that's close to right, but what I'm inferring from what you're saying is that you have the identity of someone who deserves to feel well.
Yes.
And I think if you have somebody who has an identity of, I solve problems at any expense, or then they won't make those choices.
Yeah, they
When you
won't
can
because
shift that identity to, hey, I deserve to feel well, you will be amazed what doors open for you. It's all fiction that doors close and it's not possible and you'll be stuck and nobody will see. It's actually really the opposite.
Well, and that's where that idea of self-talk that you talked about, right? Because again, if we have that programming from an identity perspective, we can change it, right? But again, it's like, well, if you spent 50 years telling yourself that you're worthless and don't deserve love, I'm just making something up, right? Well, if you spent 50 years telling yourself that you're worthless and not worthy of love, you got to change it. You got to change the story. It's like again, I mean, you've got a computer background, right? It's just like you got bad code in your program. So how do
It's
you
not your
fix
fault.
bad code? Yeah, and again, it's not your fault. Maybe somebody malicious came in. I mean, this happens all the time, right? With website hacking and other stuff. People come in, they'll put one line of malicious code in there, and it's like all of a sudden things aren't working quite the way they should. So how do you fix it? You got to remove or fix that line of code. And that's kind of what self-talk does to us when we think of ourselves like a computer, right? So again, it can be as simple as, and I was talking to my friend last night about this, the self-talk mantras, and think of 3 and 10 is usually how I do it. But say it to yourself, write it down at least 3 times each time you do it, because until you get to 3, it just doesn't start to stick. And even at 3, sometimes that's not enough. That's why I tell people maybe do it 10 times. Do it 3 times a day, 10 times, right? And so again, using that little thing that I had before, right, is maybe instead of saying, I don't deserve love, you say something like, I deserve love and happiness, or I'm the kind of person that is loved by others. Those kind of statements, when you start telling them to yourself, you're going to start to believe it at a subconscious level. And I know it sounds really simple, sounds really easy, and it's like simple and easy doesn't work, Jason. I need something hard. I need a 25-step way of doing it, and I have to, offer a goat and, I don't know, whatever, right? There has to be like this whole, no, it's literally as simple as that. And the 3 to 10, because I say a lot of times your subconscious calls bullshit, right? You start saying it and your subconscious is like, oh, you really don't mean that. You've spent the last 50 years telling me that you're a piece of shit. I'm not going to believe you. And all of a sudden, 4, 5, 6 times, it's like, maybe he's serious. He keeps saying this, right? And then by the time you get to 10, it's like, huh, well, that's interesting. Maybe he really is serious about this. And then I do it again a second time during the day. And it's like, again, first few times, ah, bullshit. I know you did it this morning, but that's not really what you mean. And the more you do it, the more you believe it, the more you change your identity, the more your subconscious comes along.
Absolutely. And they frame it in the positive. So don't say I'm not afraid. Say, I am on top of
Curious.
it, or I'm curious, or I'm whatever you are. Just frame it in the without the not, because your unconscious doesn't process those.
Well, and one thing that I've kind of noticed too is canceling, that I've started playing with a little bit more too, which is where if we say something that we don't mean, we cancel it. And so we say, I cancel that, and you say what you really meant. And so it's
Oh,
kind
that's
of like
good.
putting your subconscious and putting the universe on notice, like, whoa, I didn't mean that. I take that back. Let me say it the right way.
Yeah, I like that.
And that actually works for, when we're saying things, but a similar concept can be when people tell us things that we don't want to believe, right?
Right.
So again, if somebody's wagging their finger at me and saying, Jason, you're so stupid, right? I can choose to accept that spell, because words are magic. And when people say something like that, it's like a spell, right? And if I choose to latch onto it and say, yeah, you're right, I'm really stupid, well, now I'm allowing that spell that they're putting on me to take hold. But I can do kind of like a proverbial, like, yeah, cross, no, I don't believe that, right? And say, I am intelligent, right? And kind of replace, instead of taking on what they're sending to you, replace it or reaffirm to yourself the opposite, which is true and not what they're actually telling you.
I do that so much with my daughter, because saying, I'm a smart person who did something daft is a different thing from saying I'm daft. Right?
Ah, yeah.
Right. So I do that a lot with her, of, hey, you're really, you're a super kind-hearted kid, and you made a mistake. What are we going to do about it? Like, that's okay. It's the behavior that was the problem, not the identity. And so, as soon as somebody said, you're stupid to me, I would just be like, well, no.
Yep. Nope. I
And
canceled
then I would
that.
evaluate, did I actually do something stupid? Possibly, possibly not. I wouldn't internalize that. I wouldn't let somebody else identify, like, give me an identity of that. You're stupid, or you're this, or you're
Yeah, which is
that. And
interesting. And
so
like
much
you
of it
said,
came from childhood, right? These things,
absolutely.
right? They this, you know, my same thing. My daughter changed schools when she was six and went into, I guess, what in America is first grade. And the previous school, they had taught counting one way, and the new school, they did it differently. So she was struggling, and her teacher tried to be helpful and just said, at that school, you didn't learn what you needed to do this, so that's why you're not so good in math right now. And what she heard was, I'm not good in math. And it took a long time to say, you're good in math, you have the potential to be good in math, whether you love it or not, it's a different story. And that was really just a comment from somebody who was trying to be helpful. It had to do with that transition. It doesn't define you, right? And it takes somebody with a lot of coaching experience to be able to do that. Most kids would just grow up thinking they're bad at math. I'm someone who's bad at math, or I'm someone who's good at math, or I'm someone. And it wasn't malicious. Like, the malicious code, like, it is malicious code once it's inside, but it's not. It was done with a really positive intention. The teacher was genuinely trying to help her understand why she was struggling. So, and then we go through, school and university and all those things that our clients would typically have done as executives. And all the way through that, you're taught, like, you have to be competitive. You have to be at the top of the bell curve. You have to be this, you have to be that. And so all of a sudden, somebody tells you you don't. It's like, what? It's like, you can be, and you can also be healthy and well and whole, many other things, right?
Well, and yeah, you don't have to be. I mean, I think earlier on you made a comment about, a lot of times executives think they kind of have to be a carbon copy mold of what's in the job description. Everybody has to be a robot, do things the same
Yeah.
way. And no, you can be authentic to who you are. You can be quirky. You can, be whatever it is that you are and still be successful at it. But we've told ourselves these stories. We have that programming. We've have the negative self-talk that just kind of reinforces all of that, but we can change it. We can change it, right? And I think too, I mean,
Absolutely.
just to kind of, wrap up, because it's been a great conversation too, right? I mean, about a lot of,
Time's flown.
I know time has flown and it's like, well, we could be here for 3 hours, but we can't do that. Both of us have stuff we got to get on to. But I think it's I guess just to kind of wrap up, maybe I wanted to, because we kind of made reference to this at the beginning, but around this whole idea of boundaries too, and the fact that most people don't actually set those boundaries, and it's killing people, right? I use this analogy, right? Every time you point a finger at somebody, you got three pointing back at yourself. Right. And so I will go on record as I have many times, but organizations today, for the most part, are killing people. They're putting their employees in modern day slavery, effectively, and treating them like cattle, like some tool, and not treating them like a human. And so because of that, obviously, there's a lot of those pressures and things that are coming on. People are getting sick, people are dying, all these things that are happening. And again, both of our experiences kind of along that vein, right? In organizations that are like putting the pressure on the culture, the politics of you have to be competitive, you have to, if you're going to get ahead, you have to, cut the other person's Achilles so you can get past them. right? And we buy into that, but we don't have to buy into that. And you know, the whole idea of, I mean, again, I just had a conversation with a friend about this where, you know, she was overworked, but part of it was, again, her wanting to do a lot more than was actually expected. And so again, when you start to put those boundaries on and you realize or kind of walk away and separate it, and it's like, you know what? All my company really requires is me to show up 40 hours a week and maybe put out these five reports. So what if I could just be happy doing that? And I can go walk in the Alps and I can take my daughter to, you know, whatever, you know, spend more time with my family or do other things like that, that a lot of times it's up to us to start setting the boundary before we get to that point. So, you know, how do you kind of help clients, or what are kind of some suggestions maybe for people to set boundaries? Because I think, again, we talked a little bit about the identity, the resilience, but what does a boundary kind of look like?
So, just a side note before that, which is top performing organizations don't behave that way. So, if your organization does have
Yes.
that culture, it's probably in the bottom percentage and it will catch up to them. Just side note, all the research shows that. For the boundaries, what I like to do is just go through a process of, I actually have a tool for it, but just go through a process of really looking at what's really important to you. One good thing to do is just to make the list of, oh, if I had time, I would garden and I would paint and I would read and I would jog and I would sail and I would ski and I would, right? Make the list. And then how much time would you actually spend in a day or a week doing each of those activities? Like, yeah, I love gardening, but I'm not going to do 5 days a week of gardening. I might want to do 2 hours a week of gardening. Well, that means that I need to free up 2 hours. Okay, now what can I automate or delete or delegate that frees up that time? And then actually give yourself permission to use the time, even if it's half an hour to start. Well, you're doing half an hour more gardening than you were. I'm using gardening as an example. Obviously, everybody's different what they want to do. But, you know, so I find looking at that and then putting the time for that in your calendar, like blocking that out. So maybe it's your lunch times, maybe it's your morning. You know, everybody's schedule is completely different, and what works for each person is different, but make sure that is there first and work your meetings around it.
Well, and then again, once you've kind of identified it or have it discrete, then you can start planning for it, right? And like you said, anybody, no matter how busy you are, anybody can find 15 or 30 minutes or an hour a day for things. You know, quit, you know, reduce your time on social media. Don't watch TV as much. Don't, right? Again, there's lots of these different things that you could choose to replace with. You know, which is really interesting, like that, to be able to set those boundaries and start doing more of what it is that you actually want to do, right? And I think too, you know, one thing that I suggest, because you said, you know, cut it out, delete it, automate it, delegate it, right? That's a common leadership thing to try to find more time. But what I'm encouraging people to do too, and well, and you know this from being a CIO, right? Whenever you put in a new system, one of the steps kind of in the project is stop sending out the reports from the old system and see who complains, right? Because a lot of times what happens is over time, you know, maybe you're sending out 500 reports a month, but people only read 20 of them, right? And so you just stop sending them, you just stop doing it and see if anybody complains. And so again, I was talking about this with a friend. And there was this piece of work that she had to do, a paper that she had to review because she's a professor, right? And so normally, I mean, it's like a 100-page document for somebody's dissertation and all this kind of stuff. She'd normally spend like 2.5 hours maybe on it. But after we had the discussion, she's like, you know, I'm not the chair. I'm just on the advisory panel. I don't need to spend that much time. She only spent like 15 or 30 minutes on it instead of 2.5 hours. Right. So again, there's some found time. There's a boundary of, again, when you stop and you think about, what boundaries are really, and not put these additional pressures on yourself, right? That only you're the only one putting it on, right? Because, she wasn't going to get kudos for spending 2.5 hours on it.
No,
As long as
never.
she did the minimum of what was required, that's all that was necessary. So,
Every quarter, I go through a whole series of questions as I look forward to what I want for the next quarter. One of them is when I, you know, if I've when I've achieved what I want looking back, what did I let go of to get there? And I love that question. Like, what was I grateful for, and what do I, you know, what did I do to get there? That's one set of things. What did I let go of is probably the most important. I just let
yeah, and
whatever comes to
it's
mind come to mind, and it just appears. And then you know what you have to really let go of.
yeah, because it's good from a reflective standpoint, but also, like you said, of what do I need to let go of to maybe put the things in my life that I want to have in my life,
Yeah.
right? Because we have to destroy, we have to get rid of before we can let more in. And a
Exactly.
lot of times people, we don't think about that,
Driving
which
with
is
the
good.
brakes on, you know, don't do that. Don't do that.
Man,
I
this is
have to
good
let go of the
stuff.
brake pedal.
Yeah, let go of the brake pedal, put the emergency brake back where it belongs. Let's go. Let's go.
Exactly.
Well,
Exactly.
Sima, thank you. This is
Oh, thank you, Jason.
we ended up
Really.
talking about a lot of different things, but again, whether people are executives or not, this is a real issue for
Everybody.
everybody,
It's a real
right?
issue for everybody. I focus
Sing.
on leaders because that if it has a trickle-on impactful change so broadly, and I just want that change, and I know it supports everybody because it's a human experience. It's part of what our growth and what we learn. Everybody's
No,
affected.
so I appreciate it. You got some practical stuff.
Oh.
People can realize they're not alone. The bright, boundaries, resilience, identity, tools and techniques, and evolution, kind of a good process, for people to think about and go through. So thank you. And,
Well, thank
again,
you.
for, for people that are listening and they're like, man, I really like this lady. I need to connect with her. How's the best way for people to reach out to you?
Probably email info@executivereflections.com, all one word,
Okay,
or on
info.
LinkedIn. See
All right.
Manuel.
And LinkedIn. All
Yeah.
right. LinkedIn
Yeah.
is where I'm at too. In fact, I
Yeah,
think that,
exactly.
yeah.
We're connected. So if you find
We're
Jason,
connected.
always find me.
Always
And
find me.
that's how we reconnected, right? Because we were connected on
Yeah, because you
close
listened to
out.
the podcast and then you sent me a direct message on LinkedIn.
Yeah,
Yeah,
exactly.
that's how we got back.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
thank you, my
Super.
friend, and
Thank you.
blessings to
What a
you
fun
and
conversation.
all
I
the
mean, hard
people.
topic, but fun conversation because it's
Well,
make.
it's a serious, but it's an important topic, right? Because I'm tired of seeing people burned out, having these mental health issues. We got to stop it. I mean, it's literally killing people, and we got to stop it.
Gotta stop it.
Because we all need to live healthy, vibrant, long lives. And you can,
You
right?
can.
Because again, there's hope on the other side of the rainbows.
Yes, there
So
is.
thank you, thank you,
Good.
thank you. And
Thanks.
everybody listening, we'll see you on the next episode. Thanks for listening. And that's a wrap. Thanks for listening. The fact that you listened to this entire episode means you got value and others will too. Do me a favor and leave a 5-star review with comments and then share with others. You can also check out all of my videos on my YouTube channel and my website, jasonmefford.com. This podcast is primarily for education and commentary and does not represent professional advice. Views and opinions expressed on this show are that of the individuals and not of their respective organizations.